The Money Show. Small business.
Can we have a break from Corona? I mean, it's real, and I'm sure many of the businesses that you work with, Pavlo, must be concerned about, you know, their supply chains, worried about their workers, worried about their businesses. But can we have a bit of a break from Corona or not?
I think we do need to have a break from it, Bruce, because let's talk about it next week rather than this week. From a business perspective, at least from a small business perspective, there are lots of opportunities that are emerging as a result of it. And I think there's going to be a lot of really interesting innovation that comes out of this process, because small business owners have to respond, and they can respond fast. So I'm seeing some really interesting stuff come out. But one of the most interesting things I did see today is a business that is quite remarkable in terms of it being born and bred from African soil in the tall, long grass of South Africa. And it's finding itself positioned to take on a very thin, narrow market, but in about 17 countries, which makes for this business an enormous market.
What does it do?
I think we should rather talk about what it did to become what it has become.
Because if you tell me what it does, you'll give it away.
I'll give it away.
Oh, it's so secretive and so obtuse. Okay, try to be less obtuse now, Pablo. Okay, so it's about being competitive in a noisy world. It's mm-hmm. about being able to deliver a product, even if it's something fairly boring.
Yeah.
But yeah, lots of stuff. I mean, toilet paper must be one of the most boring businesses in the world, but everyone wants it right now.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone's stockpiling it, which is crazy too, but that's another issue altogether. So how does a boring business in a boring market delivering a boring product to boring people become exciting?
Well, let's talk about what all businesses are taught to do, what we're taught to do, what we're told to do, from whether it be universities or schools or guides or mentors or books or whatever it may be. We're told that in order to compete in a competitive space, you need to get an advantage of some sort. And the first advantage that always gets told is a good advantage to have is a product advantage. And a product advantage says, or suggests at least, I have a product, it's a great product, and that in its own right should win the day. But here's the thing, Bruce. You have a great product in some area. Tomorrow, your competitor will have an equally great product. And if it's not tomorrow, it'll be next week. So all the effort you make in trying to convince the world that you've got a great product will simply be nullified in a month, 6 months, a year.
By which time you've created a new market for this particular product, a competitor comes along with something slightly better, and you've done all the hard work, and they then just riot in your coattails.
Thank you very much. It repeats itself again and again and again. So the next thing we're told is, well, people want service. You have to have a service advantage. And it's fascinating because when I speak to people about what makes you different, and they say to me, we have a very good service. We have a service advantage. I dig and 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 I dig. And eventually what emerges, well, I am the cause of the service.
Because so, I have a personal relationship with all of my clients because they love me and they've known me since day one. And mm-hmm. I look after them because they become my friends.
Completely. And where do we see this extensively? Well, whether it be the networks, whether it be the banks, whether it be the two big gym groups, whether it be the four big retailers, people complain about service, people argue service, and it might be working this week, but not necessarily next week. But much of a muchness, it's all pretty much the same. Service is not convincing. So the last thing that we get taught actively, price. Price matters, Bruce. Price really, and it does. And price is serious. But here's the thing. If I have the best price today, it's a function of time before you have an equally good price tomorrow. So we're competing for the same clients because we're in the same sector, in the same industry. We've got the same product. We have equal service. How do I take that client away from you? I drop my price. And your response?
I drop my price.
I'm going to drop my price.
But I can't service you as well as I did because now I've dropped my price so much I can't afford the service levels. So now I'm going to begin to slip, and my customer experience is going to be altered.
Completely. And beyond that, when you see the EBITDA numbers, the profit numbers that come out of these businesses with huge turnovers and thinning margins because they're playing the price game, That makes for terrible valuations, and more importantly, it makes it hard to offload that business and sell it. So I don't think that those three areas really are going to work any longer.
That's deeply disappointing. So every single MBA that has been done over the last 30 years is no longer valid. The Pavlo MBA this evening is talking about how you stand out in a world of same, in a world where you may have something boring. If you, I don't know, make coffee cups, you'd be dumb to, because they can be made in China. Not that necessarily the supply is coming out of China at a fraction of the price that you could make them at, and they can come in bulk and you can get them in any shape, size that you want. But let's say, for example, you in the cups business, and everyone needs cups. Cups break. Cups get chipped. Nobody wants to drink from a chipped cup. It may hold a virus longer than the rest of the cup, so you want to get rid of that. So, you know, you want to be competitive. So you get the prettiest cups you can. You get them to the market as best you can, as quickly as you can, and you give a box of chocolates to every box you sell. And then because there are lots of cups in the market, you sell them for less than your competitor's price, and then they come and undercut you, and you get the picture. So how then do you gain an advantage, a global advantage even? More on that point with Pavlo Fatidis, the guy who runs Auric Business Accelerator, in a moment.
The Money Show.
Small business.
So if product advantage, service advantage, and price advantage are no longer advantages because everybody is playing that game, what game do you need to play to get ahead, Pavlo Fatidis, at Auric Business Accelerator?
So, Bruce, let's go to your example of cups, because cups are so generic, and it seems like such a kind of everyday, ordinary thing. But here's the thing. The first thing you're going to do, if you decide cups are the thing that you want to do, and the reasons why people want to do the things they do need to be very, very personal. The more personal it can be, or the more meaningful it can be for you, other than I'm doing this just simply to make money, because it's hard to sustain that as a drive behind building a business. Find something that means something to you. And let's say it's cups. There are many cups for many, many different reasons. In that, yes, they hold a beverage, a hot one, a cold one. That's their true, true function. But here's the thing. If I narrow it down and I ignore the product and I ignore the price and I ignore the idea of service, and I turn around and say, who buys cups and why? And I'm going to find, let's say I'm a mountain climber and that's my thing. And I really enjoy mountain climbing. I enjoy mountain climbing and I enjoy cups.
We enjoy cups of tea at the top of a mountain.
There we go. Now we're getting there. Because what happens at the top of a mountain, at the top of a mountain, water doesn't boil up to its normal rate. What is it? 90?
I don't know.
90 or 99 degrees. It boils far lower. And it's hard to maintain the heat in the cup. So I'm going to actually focus on solving a problem for mountain climbers and people who live in cold areas by supplying thermal cups. And thermal cups is going to be my thing. And Bruce, it's the only thing I'm going to do. So the first thing I'm going to do is narrow my focus on a problem for a very specific group of people that can be solved through a cup. The second thing I'm going to do on the back of that, I'm going to deepen my knowledge around this. I'm going to read up as much as possible. I'm going to explore far and wide. I want to know what makes a thermal cup thermal. What does the shape have an impact? Does the material have an impact? How's it made? Where do they make them? How do people use these cups? How do they get access to them? Which quality cup holds temperature further and longer than the next cup? And a weird thing starts to take place, because the more you look at the thing and the more interested you become in it and the more you develop a full comprehensive understanding of not only the materials that are used to make the cup, but the manufacturing process behind the cup, about how the cup finds its way to market, about why people buy these, how they buy them, about the complication of the design. When you're climbing up a mountain, does it need to be a round cup, a square cup, a thin cup, a long cup? When you start to get into that level of minutiae and detail, you start to develop a deeper and richer understanding of the entire process around thermal cups.
And I've just said this, there's a new market for those thermal cups as well. New parents. You know, I don't know your experience, but as a new parent, I don't know how many times you warm up the same cup of tea, because you never get to drink a cup of tea on the first go, because invariably there's going to be some chaos in the house. So your thermal cups for mountaineers, very good for first-time parents. If you make elegant ones with teddy bears on them as a second line, I hope I'm not diversifying too much, it can be exactly the same cup. But there are often lots of markets for exactly the same product for ideas you would never have thought of before.
They would, but you see, it's not the product that gets the business done. It's understanding what the problem is, understanding who has that problem, understanding how those people behave around getting the problem solved that actually generates this cup business that we are now busy designing.
I hope I've just given a really good idea to people, somebody who supplies Baby City, because Baby City sells all kinds of stuff you don't need. A thermal cup, a pretty thermal cup, is something that every parent needs.
So now you've developed this expertise and you've identified two markets, in fact. You're solving one problem, but you've identified two markets. What you want to now do is get involved in the entire thermal cup space and place. Anyone and everyone around it. People who understand thermodynamics, start to make contacts here, start to make relationships, start to share ideas, because you want to entrench yourself as an expert in solving this particular problem. Yes, it will be through a cup, but you want to be an expert on the problem and how everything around how you solve the problem through the product, through the service you have to offer, and the price point you need to offer resolves the problem for that particular group of buyers or customers in the market.
Now, what invariably happens in any business like this is that the cups business gets a little bit slow. And so you've got the technology now. And so somebody will say to you, well, you know, the economy is really tight and people aren't going out for lunch as much as they used to. The corporate lunch is effectively dead. Nobody has the canteen at work anymore. So people are taking their own lunch to work. Now, you can take last night's leftovers and warm them up in the Gunji office microwave, or you can take the hot food from home in the specially thermally heated device that is based on exactly the same technology as the cup. It's just a different format, and you've got the scuff tin, which you now take from home with hot food to work, and it's still piping hot at lunchtime, and you have a pleasant lunch experience on home-cooked food at that sort of temperature, because it's exactly the same thing. It's no longer just the cup. It is now diversifying the same tech, the same purpose, different market. And now, are we losing the plot?
No, you've lost the plot, because now you've gone back to product.
You see?
And that, you've held on to the product, and that's how easy it is.
But this is what everybody does. So Stanley, for example, and Stanley makes Stanley knives, right? These are the box cutters.
Yes.
And now you go to Outdoor Warehouse or any one of these places, there are a million Stanley products. There are flasks, and there are things. The brand Stanley is really strong, but they're taking this brand and they're slapping it on to everything. And you go, well, they're diversifying. That's a sensible thing to do. You're suggesting it's not.
I'm absolutely suggesting it's not. So firstly, if you're a very large business, you might think that you have the opportunity to do this. Throw money at it and let it stick. It's a product-driven mindset. I'm arguing that as a small business, a growing business, if you want to take something built here and make it global, you need to focus on problems. So let's go back to it. I promise you, the problem of the mountain climber, the people who climb or live in very cold climes and high altitudes, in terms of wanting a thermal cup, is very different to the parent who's looking for a cup to maintain the heat of the tea because they're being distracted 100 ways from Sunday.
It's the same problem.
It's very, very different. And it's very different because each of them experience the problem differently, and each of them would then lend their minds, ears, and eyes to looking for content that needs to reach them very differently. The mountain climber, we know where they're reading, what they're reading. We understand how they think, what language they use. We understand the culture of it because we have invested deeply in starting with the problem and the people who have the problem, as opposed to the product that provides the solution. It's a fundamental difference. So here's an alternative to the diversification. Because diversification happens when I think, oh gosh, how big is that market in South Africa? Well, it's got 2,000 people. One can't build a business on that. No. And you're absolutely right. But here's the thing, Bruce. What we then do is, once we've understood this and we have developed the right relationships in terms of suppliers, and we have developed the right content to resonate with the mindset, culture, views, news of mountain climbers. Language that when they read it, they feel heard and understood, because that's the beginning of trust. What we then do is we pop off to, you said Norway's been shut down. So maybe
Denmark,
not
Denmark,
Norway.
Denmark.
Well, then let's go to Norway. It's a cold climb. And when we start looking at mountain climbers in Norway and we start to promote what it is that we do, for the first time, they won't be reading about cups. They'll be reading about thermal cups whose purpose is not to actually pour a beverage into, but to sustain heat at the top of a mountain. All of a sudden, in what they are looking for their very specific set of problems and requirements, they find a language that you have developed unique specifically to solving that problem, and it works there. It'll work in any other climbs that you go to, because that's where you differentiate yourself and make yourself special. A thin, narrow opportunity here, well built and properly thought through, gives you the same opportunity globally. A thin market here, a thin market there, rack and stack 17 countries together, not a bad business.
Pablo Fatidis from Auric Business Accelerator.